Hi, this is Brian Lehrer. You're listening to WNYC On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at WNYC.org and iTunes.
WNYC On Demand is supported by DataPipe Managed Hosting Services, providing application management, hosting, professional services, security services, and compliance solutions for mid-market and Fortune 1000 enterprises. DataPipe.com.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and we still don't know, of course, who the Democratic nominee for president will be, but if it is Barack Obama, the need for him to deal with racial innuendo will undoubtedly increase over what it has been during the Democratic primary season. This, of course, would be an unprecedented test during a presidential general election campaign, compounded by the fact that Obama, who is Christian, has a Muslim middle name. Already this week, John McCain found himself in the position of denouncing a Cincinnati talk show host, who is also on once a week in New York, by the way, who opened for him at an Ohio rally, named Bill Cunningham. You've probably heard this soundbite of Cunningham's speech.
At some point, the media will quit taking sides in this thing and maybe start covering Barack Hussein Obama the same way they covered Bush, the same way they covered Cheney, and the same way they cover every Republican.
That was one of many uses of Obama's middle name in that speech. And McCain, as I said, denounced that kind of language. But Cunningham himself showed no remorse when he spoke to NPR's All Things Considered on Wednesday.
Well, it's his name, the name given to him by his mother and by his father. And going back into American history, I'm a bit of an historian. You might recall Franklin Delano Roosevelt and Dwight David Eisenhower and John Fitzgerald Kennedy, William Jefferson Clinton, a man who would be president. Normally, the middle name is employed in order to give the man more dignity and more respect. And my goal was simply to state the fellow's name, much like I often say, John Sidney McCain III.
I actually heard him on his New York talk show on Sunday nights on WABC referring to John Wayne McCain and Barack Hussein Obama repeatedly a couple of weeks ago. But there was also the photo that someone leaked this week and some newspapers dutifully published of Obama in traditional Somali clothing from when he was on a trip there. So this is likely just the beginning of this stuff if Obama is the nominee. Let's talk about it with Stephanie Robinson, president and CEO of the Jamestown Project, a national think tank that focuses on democracy. She's the former chief counsel to Senator Edward Kennedy and a nationally recognized expert on issues related to social policy, family, and electoral politics. She's also a lecturer on law at the Harvard Law School. Ms. Robinson, welcome to WNYC. Good morning.
Thank you very much, Brian. Good
morning. Our phones are open on this at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Ms. Robinson, what do you make of what's come up so far? Is it better or worse than you expected?
Oh, I think that it's probably pretty much exactly what I expected. I think that we live, unfortunately, still in a country that hasn't gotten over its race problems yet. I think you've seen some of the tensions of it and some of the tensions between African Americans and Latino Americans, as well as white Americans in the earlier states in the primaries. I think that you're seeing it heat up considerably now. I'm happy, Brian, that you mentioned that it's not even just a race issue. It's also a religious issue that's coming up when we start talking about Hussein and when we start talking about Muslims and we talk about them in a derisive way. So, I mean, it's not that this is something that wasn't expected. And I think that it probably could be a lot worse. And my hope would be that it would be a lot better.
The defiance of Bill Cunningham struck me when he was on All Things Considered Wednesday. He even withdrew his support of John McCain because McCain denounced him. This is a sign to me that it's not all up to the McCain campaign, even if they run a completely clean campaign. So how much do you think anyone can control the racist or below-the-belt stuff that anyone is tempted to put out?
Right. I mean, and let me say, I think there are two things that are going on. There's a swath of people in our country, and God bless them, who are entertainers. I mean, that's what they do. They're on the radio, and they're here to entertain, and they want to turn up the heat all the time. And they get better ratings that way, and they get more notoriety and attention that way. And it's unfortunate that they use race or anything else. We saw it with Imus as well. So, I mean, that's one thing that's going on. Then there really is this issue of how this country is going to grapple with the issue of race. And I think that John McCain, for everything that he's done, and as you said, I used to work in the Senate, he is a very upright an honorable man. And I think that he quickly got on top of this, and he did what he can do. The problem is, as I think you're alluding to, is that you are going to have people who are either his surrogates directly or people who are perceived as his surrogates who are out there who are going to raise these issues. And I don't think that any campaign can control that. I think that McCain is going to have to do, quite frankly, what Obama has done to date, which is said, this is who I am. I stand up in front of you and you see a black man, you see my black wife, and you see my black children. That's fine. But I'm not running for president of black America. I'm not running for mayor of a predominantly black city. I'm running for president of the United States. And as such, it's much broader and much bigger than that. And I am here to represent all of us and the best in all of us. And I think that because, as we've seen, at least so far in these primaries, that both Senator McCain and Senator Obama have been very upfront with who they are and really try not to do a lot of mudslinging and really interested in uniting the country, I think that they walk into the general election, if those are to be the candidates for the general election, they walk into the general election at least, with the benefit of the doubt of their campaigns at least being above board and trying to do the right thing and hopefully lifting up people like, you know, like Bill Cunningham and others to a higher plane to have a more civilized and quite frankly, much more relevant discussion on the issues that impact our country at this important time.
Anne in Nutley, you're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Brian. I'm calling to comment on the pictures of Obama showing up with a Somali garb. I just wanted to comment that if John McCain went to Ireland and put on a kilt, I'm sure that the reaction would not be the same among racist America. I feel that it behooves all of us to maintain a vigilance to safeguard our commitment to not being racist, because it has not gone away. We are still a nation that has a lot of racism, and that's my comment.
Go ahead, Stephanie.
And I think that is absolutely right. And I think with more people like your caller realizing where we have come and still where we have to go with the issues of racism is all part of this progress of this process that we have to go as a country as sort of this ever changing and ever developing democratic experiment in the United States. I would also just say that it's not just an issue inside of our borders. It's not as though we United States citizens are the only ones who are watching these campaigns in this election. It's being watched around the world. And one of the things that people have said is that we need to reassert ourselves as moral leaders and as the leaders that we used to be in this country. And I think that by putting out statements, no matter what they say, because we know that, somebody can say, well, I was just putting this out because he looks so nice in this garb. But we know by putting out these kinds of things, these kinds of statements, it speaks volumes to our friends and allies around this world.
It's really the subtext, isn't it?
It is.
And we don't know who put out that photo, and the Daily News ran it big on its cover, but then inside ran some other examples of politicians on trips wearing local garb, Hillary Clinton wearing a Vietnamese hat and some other things. But of course, if somebody surreptitiously releases to the press a photo of Barack Obama wearing traditional African clothing, we know what that's supposed to mean.
We definitely know what that's supposed to be. And we know so much of what we talk about with racism, at least in 2008, is not always, and not even often, explicit, blatant racism. I'm going to use the N-word, or I am discriminated against you because, or I'm going to do blackface. We don't see that. But what we do see are these, as you said, the subtext that's there. And when you say things like Barack Hussein Obama, we know what that means. I mean, a lot of people in the community, both in the black community and outside, when the comments were made about, well, Jesse Jackson won South Carolina, there was a subtext to that. And if we are saying, as a country, that we want to move past these divisions, of race and gender and other isms, then we have to then take it upon ourselves to be responsible for what we put out there. And we have to, even if we want to claim ignorance on what the subtext is, then we ought to be cautious and conscientious about what our actions are and how they'll be interpreted by other people.
Let's articulate it, because I don't think it does anybody any good for it to go assumed. I could put it in my words, but let me ask you to put it in your words. What is the subtext of that photo?
I mean, the subtext of that photo is that Barack Hussein Obama is not as American as we would want him to be. He may have some concerns about his ties to Muslim radical terrorists, that we don't know who he is for sure, and he is, you know, we need to be cautious of whether or not this is the type of person, African American, Black American, Islamic American, to lead this country.
Emmanuel in Atlanta, Georgia, listening online. You're on WNYC. Hi, Emmanuel.
Hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Sure can. Thanks for calling.
Real quick here, culturally and linguistically, there's a perspective that I don't hear articulated, and that is Hussein is an Arabic name and not exclusively an Islamic name. There are Arab Jews, Arab Christians, Arab Baha'is, as well as Arab Muslims who have that name, Hussein. So it's not exclusively a Muslim name. The larger issue or the subtext for me as well is this whole thing of white cultural supremacy that negates or subjugates the relevancy of any other culture. It's okay if it was an Arabic name that this person from Kenya happened to have. It's really okay. So that's one of the other subtextual issues that, of course, won't get articulated because nobody necessarily wants to discuss white cultural supremacy. Last point, Omar Bradley, there have been Arab Americans who have been highly decorated and recognized for their contributions to America. So I just wanted to make those points. Thank you. Have a great day.
Thank you very much. Any reaction to that before we go on to another caller, Stephanie?
No, I mean, I think that they are relevant and important points. I would also underscore the fact that we also have, a dictator who this country just went and invaded, Hussein, for a very long time, has been seen as an enemy of our country. So it is not simply the Arabic name or that it is an Arabic or an Islamic name, but it is what else is conjured up for Main Street Americans when they hear that.
Right. And I said Hussein is an Arabic name originally because the historic Hussein is the grandson of Muhammad.
Exactly.
And maybe it's become Arabic even among Christians, but not that I know of, actually.
Yeah.
But maybe it is in that usage, as the caller says. Lawrence in Hempstead, you're on WNYC. Hello, Lawrence.
Sure, Brian. Good morning. This is Lawrence. I just want to know, why is it that the media buys into this type of race baiting without calling all of these people who are turning out this propaganda to task? In other words, we sit around and listen to people talk about someone's middle name and forget to understand that nowhere in no literature have you ever heard John McCain's middle name being pronounced in any event on any issue. That's number one. And number two, why is it that when Barack says we want to talk to people who reason different from ours, as a means of achieving an understanding when everybody gets on his case. But you forget to mention the fact that Mr. Musharraf was not elected by nobody. He killed all kinds of people. There were all kinds of embargoes on him. And President Bush still went out and talked to him after 9/11. and did achieve a purpose that was beneficial to America. Okay, and I could carry on and on. We talk about developing English as a quote-unquote official language of the United States and forget to know that there are other United States territories, Puerto Rico, Guam, and the rest, where majority of the people do not speak English.
All right, let's not throw the entire kitchen sink of issues into this, but Lawrence, I gather that you're a victim of something that's universal across all cultures, adults trying to have a political conversation and their kids not letting them.
That would be it, Brian. You got to the heart of my issue, which is take people to task for what they are talking about and let them see reality, because if you let them get away with just these one-liners, it just tends to obscure the actual premise of what we are supposed to be as Americans.
Thank you.
When I got here 28 years ago, Brian, I could not speak English. I went to school, became a nurse. I went back to school, became an attorney. And you could actually see the difference in dealing with people who are quote-unquote open-minded and people who are, I hate to say, have tunnel vision, where they only see things in one perspective and only their way.
And Lawrence, thank you very much for your call. You know, Stephanie Robinson, lecturer at Harvard Law School, one of the things that he actually didn't even bring up that he had mentioned to my screener was that to ask when was the last time anyone mentioned John McCain's pastor or church. However, one place where racial identity has come up that where it may be a legitimate issue for exploration, and I wonder your opinion about this and if you think there's complexity in drawing the line, is in Obama's relationship to his pastor, Jeremiah Wright, because of Wright's relationship with Louis Farrakhan and other kinds of black nationalist thought. So how much do you think that's a legitimate area for the media or the opposition to explore?
I think it's legitimate. One thing that I would say is I agree with those who say that this is a political race. We're talking about politics, not tiddlywinks. And so it is. I mean, you know, it was legitimate when we were talking about South Carolina and talking about and when we bring up whether or not Republicans are seen as ex or former Klansmen or going to, you know, Wright University. I mean, these issues and sort of who you associate with and what and whether that association with that person somehow impacts your belief, your core belief system, and or the policies that you will propose or implement. I think, you know, there's an argument to be made for that. There's even an argument to be made for that if it has no relevance, quite frankly, to what the issues are, the policy is, because, quite frankly, many people would say that a lot of this race itself has not been argued or debated on the issues, but it's been debated on things such as personality, such as congeniality. And so that's all that makes up a person, a human being, and our politicians are human beings. So I actually don't take issue with people bringing that up. What I do take issue with is, and I think that it should be argued and debated in the public square, is that you have to understand the history of the black church in America, and you also have to understand how the black church in America operates. And so Jeremiah Wright, not merely, quite frankly, Reverend Wright, not merely because of his association with Louis Farrakhan, that's been sort of the new flavor for the week, but it also is a lot of the stuff that Jeremiah Wright says. I mean, what he preaches himself. Now, there's some of this that's wonderful. People always want to talk about the black church and the, you know, the civic organizations and the community activists within communities doing something for their own community and stop asking for a handout and sort of pull yourself up by the bootstraps and be a part of your community. Well, you can't say you want the black church to start helping and taking care of people in their community and they can't use the word black in covenants that they put forward or in ideas that they put forward and to reach their congregation and their surrounding neighborhoods. So I actually would say let's have that conversation, because it's a conversation that opens up the door to allow a broader swath of Americans to understand various cultures. And I don't think that that's a bad thing. What I do think is a bad thing is to somehow make this huge jump from Jeremiah Wright, from Barack Obama to Jeremiah Wright to Louis Farrakhan and to Barack somehow believe believing the anti-Semitic rhetoric that Louis Farrakhan
puts out there. Right, and we're out of time, so I'm going to have to invite you back to have this conversation, because I think we should have exactly that conversation in greater depth. So maybe that we could do it sometime. But just to follow up on exactly what you said, is it really a leap to at least look at the preachings of Jeremiah Wright, mm-hmm. which you said are themselves to some mm-hmm. degree controversial, since Obama says that Wright is the great spiritual advisor of his life?
I mean, and I think that those are issues that have to be interrogated.
And we leave it there for now with Stephanie Robinson, President and CEO of the Jamestown Project, Chief Counsel in the past to Senator Edward Kennedy, and a lecturer on law at the Harvard Law School. Thanks so much for doing
this
with
us. Thank you very much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up, Rick Steves on traveling in the age of the weak dollar. Stay with us. Thanks for listening to WNYC On Demand. Please check out our other programs at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This free service is made possible by our listeners. Become a member of WNYC today.